If conservatives looked at DOJ, looked like they looked at EPA or FDA, they'd see the same sorts of abuse and fraud and overzealous use of power. And that's what they need to do.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Kevin Ring. He's the Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Families Against Mandatory Minimums, or FAM. Kevin, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
This is a banner time for criminal justice reform. A lot of things going on in the headlines, especially the Department of Justice has just released over 6,000 criminals from the federal prisons. What's going on with that?
Well, 6,000 drug offenders have been released because more than a year ago, the U.S. Sentencing Commission, which is not connected to the Justice Department, made a decision to reduce the drug guidelines by two levels. That's how they calculate the sentences.
Right.
They decided drug weight was driving the sentences too high. They moved them down. And as a result, 6,000 people, 46,000 over the course of the next 10 years, will get relief.
When conservatives especially, they say, oh, Obama is releasing.
Yeah.
He's going with his big jailer's keys and opening doors. It really isn't that.
It's not Obama. In fact, the Justice Department argued against most of this release. They wanted to put conditions on who could get this retroactive relief.
So among these 6,000, these are nonviolent drug offenders.
Yes, almost wholly. There's very few violent prisoners in the federal system. Those are mostly in state prisons. So these are people who have drug offenses. It may be the case that they had a gun at some point or they have some previous conviction.
But they're not going around shooting people up or anything.
Absolutely not.
And a third of them are going to be deported.
That's right. So you're talking about 4,000 people in a country of, 300 million. So this isn't some tidal wave of folks. This is, a few each community.
Now, Jeb Bush, one of the Republican presidential candidates, former governor of Florida, he called this the wrong approach, but for the right reasons or the right goals. Mm-hmm. And he specifically said, look, there's a lot of people in Congress on the Republican side who are talking about this. Obama should have worked with them. Does that make sense, or is that a fair assessment of the situation?
No, I think this is an all hands on deck situation. So the president's doing what he can through commutations, Congress is taking up criminal justice reform, and the commission, this is their job, is to reevaluate sentence lengths. They did that, they changed it going forward, and out of fairness, they said we also have to make this change retroactive. So these are the lowest hanging fruit. These are the safest people we have. So if this is a problem, it's hard to think they're going to accept any other sort of reform.
So where did the mandatory minimums come from, and why is the steam kind of coming out from pushing those?
Well, we got mandatory minimums mostly in the 80s and 90s, where people wanted to get tough on crime and they wanted to lock everybody up because we did have a higher crime in the late 70s and they thought that was the right response. And so crime went down. And so if you looked at those two data points, if you said we put in mandatory minimums, crime went down, you would argue they have done well. But the states started going broke. Their corrections budgets were going out of control. So they started changing them. You had states like Michigan, New York, Rhode Island, repealing their mandatory minimums, investing that money, though, in other things, law enforcement things, and their crime rates continue to drop. So the feds have said, we now have evidence that we don't need to have these policies, and they're at a point where they need to change it because we're diverting so much money from FBI agents, prosecutors, into holding nonviolent offenders.
And even somebody like Rick Perry, the former Texas governor, he bragged last year at CPAC, a conservative meeting, that he had closed a prison in Texas. This seems to be a moment where people on the right and the left, libertarians and progressives, everybody is in for criminal justice reform.
That's right. And in Texas, what they'll tell you too is the reason they were able to do what they did was because they don't have the mandatory minimums we have at the federal level in some other states. So when they were able to do more in programming, do more sort of risk assessment, and let people out and use incentives, they were able to do that because they didn't have mandatory sentences. But Perry is a good example of this growing trend. You have a Right on Crime group out there that's full of old conservative leaders. You have the Koch brothers. You have Grover Norquist and ACLU. And then the traditional allies on the left. But it's been amazing to watch. And there is a consensus now that at least with nonviolent offenders, mostly drug cases, we can do it better.
Is this also part of, we just saw Ohio fail to pass pot legalization, but perhaps more stunning was that pot legalization was up for a vote in Ohio. Is the impulse towards mandatory minimums starting to become undone as the drug war seems to be winding down?
Yeah, and I think a good piece of evidence for that is look at how crack was treated. Now there are differences between crack and heroin, but they're two serious drugs. And crack was considered a law enforcement problem. That's when mandatory minimums really hit. And now we're talking about a heroin epidemic, and everyone's viewing this as a public safety or public health crisis. That reaction couldn't be more different than what we did in the 80s and the 90s. And I think it's just a sign of progress.
Right. Well, another sign of that is a poll that FAM conducted recently that talked about ending mandatory minimums for nonviolent crime. Tell us about those findings and why they're heartening for you.
Well, we did a poll about 5 years ago, and it found that 60% supported repeal of mandatory minimums. This poll, just 5 years later, showed 77%. Mm-hmm. And along the lines of what you were just saying, it's across the board, across the political spectrum. The biggest jump was among Republicans and self-described conservatives. Mm-hmm. Among that group, a full 71% now support repealing mandatory minimums. That would have been unheard of 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so across the board, people are changing their mind on this. They think there's other things they can do. And there's evidence to support that. And so now the biggest change, I would say, also is law enforcement. We've recently had a new group come out, Law Enforcement to Reduce Crime and Incarceration. So the people with badges are now saying, we have the wrong people in jail. Mm-hmm. We need resources to go after the bad guys, but we're wasting it on holding these nonviolent people.
Now, this is not simply an academic or philosophical discussion for you. You are a convicted felon.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about what you were convicted for and what your experience, what kind of insight that gave you about reforming criminal justice and sentencing.
Sure. Well, I was convicted of a white-collar offense. I was a lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and I was convicted of a junior varsity form of bribery. And so I went to a federal prison camp. There are no white-collar camps. These are mostly drug and gun offenders I served with for a year and a half. And I saw the people who were serving mandatory minimum sentences, and I wish everyone had that opportunity, maybe as visitors, because they're not who you think they are. I mean, these are people who made mistakes, made bad judgments, but it's not because they knew the law, they knew there was a chance of getting caught, and just did a cost-benefit analysis. They just made stupid decisions. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them will tell you they needed to be punished and held accountable to get on the right track, but they don't need 10 or 20 years mm-hmm. to figure that out. And so you just see a lot of waste because these people aren't going to come out any better than when they went in. And there's things we could do that would make them less likely to recidivate, which is in our interest.
Right.
So you would think
those things, and is that part of, are those kinds of reforms really going forward, or are we talking about window dressing?
Well, the bills in Congress talk about that, because they talk about doing front end and back end. Mm-hmm. So you'll reduce sentences, which is very important, but you'll use that savings to do things on the back end, like more drug treatment. Mm-hmm. Also things that aren't necessarily related to drugs, but cognitive behavioral therapy, teaching mm-hmm. people their thought process, that people have bad decision making.
Right. And bad impulse control.
Yeah, impulse control, exactly. And so these are some of these crimes are almost honor crimes. You know, they're just out of vengefulness, they're gang related, or they're just things that people can grow out of. And so that's why some people do age out of crime. Mm-hmm. So they want to do more programming like that. Job training is important. And then the other thing is when they get job skills that they can come out with, we got to make sure that they're employable. And so that's the other thing, is we've got to work as a country on letting people come back and have jobs.
Talk a bit about that, because Obama recently was talking about we got to get the box off of applications saying, have you ever been arrested? Have you ever been convicted? And that seems to be a good idea, but it's also true that that's happening voluntarily at places like Walmart and other places. Is that more important, that cultural change, than the legal one, or how do they work together?
Yeah, I'm sure that the president can sort of contribute to that cultural change, but it's happening. And just banning the box, you know, if I interview you for your job, I may not ask you in your application, but I see a 10-year gap in your resume, that's a problem. And so the question is more, how am I going to react to that gap than whether I ask you the question? And so we need people to realize that just because you serve time, you're not disqualified from productive service.
And this is something over the past 30, 40 years, the United States went from being arguably the land of the free to the land of the incarcerated.
Yes.
You know, is that a factor here that everybody now knows people who have been in jail, pretty much?
I think that's right. I mean, the numbers that Pew has found, 1 in 101 adults, 1 in 35 under some sort of control, either parole, probation, jail, or prison, that's a staggering number. And so I grew up in a time where no one knew somebody who went to prison. Now my kids don't know anyone who doesn't know somebody who went to prison. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like other cultural changes, for instance, gay rights, where the more people associate with people who have had these experiences, they change their opinion of it.
Families Against Mandatory Minimums, it's at FAMM.org, FAMM.org.
Right.
What does victory in your cause look like for FAM?
It looks like rational sentencing laws, where judges have the power to give long sentences to people who need long punishments and to give shorter sentences to shorter punishments. It's not revolutionary. It's the idea that we are individuals. the mistakes we make are individual mistakes, and the punishments we get for those mistakes mm-hmm. should be individualized. So that's all it is. And it's not anti-punishment. It's not anti-prison. Mm-hmm. It's just the idea that we should be treated as individuals.
So it's kind of bringing a bedrock value for conservatives. No one size fits all. That's true in education. It's true in all sorts of things, including sentencing.
Yeah, and if conservatives looked at DOJ, looked like they looked at EPA or FDA, they'd see the same sorts of abuse and fraud and overzealous use of power. Mm-hmm. And that's what they need to do. And those who are doing it, like Mike Lee and Rand Paul, mm-hmm. when they look at it, they're saying, we're not getting the biggest bang for the buck. If we're supposed to get out of the Justice Department public safety, we could get more for less money. Mm-hmm. So let's do those things. And so that's why I think you're seeing conservatives come around.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. We've been talking with Kevin Ring. He's from Families Against Mandatory Minimum. Thank you so much for talking.
Thanks for having me.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.